Hello and welcome to another episode of Solo Powered with me, Ariana Dunn. This is a podcast that celebrates doing things solo, whether that be solo travel, solo business, solo journey to parenthood, single by choice, solo adventures, or solo pursuits of passion. Remember, this is not about living a lonely life. This is about living the most full life on your terms. So I have a wonderful guest who I have been very lucky to meet in the last few weeks. In Ireland, we have been celebrating the St. Bridget's Day Festival. St. Bridget was, and it was and is, our, she is our one of our patron saints along with St. Patrick. And luckily, she has been recognised by the Irish government in the last few years and has been granted a bank holiday, which we all get to enjoy. But along with that came a lot of opportunities for women to celebrate the incredible wise woman and saint and goddess that Bridget was. Some people see her more of a goddess, some people see her as a saint, depending on your religious choices. But my guest today is Lorraine O'Dwyer, and I think she will agree she most certainly sees her as a goddess.
Oh, yes.
Lorraine O'Dwyer is an 8th generation Bán Fasa, or a witch, for want of a better word, a wise woman. It is the translation from Irish. She is based in the southwest of Ireland, in the sunny southeast in Wexford. She's famed for her unique storytelling walks and workshops that draw us back into the past. And she's just an incredible person who I was very lucky to meet, as I say, on these festivals. She taught me how to make a St. Bridget's cross using some dried reeds. And having the conversation that I had with her about her uniqueness in this world, and also how she grew up as a staunch pagan in a time when in Ireland Catholicism was rampant. It's not so much anymore, I don't think. But I'm delighted to have Lorraine here to talk to us about her solo journey through all of the different things that she does. So Lorraine, you're very welcome. Thank you for joining
us. Thank you. Thank you, Ariana. Gosh, I'm blushing now. That's such a lovely intro. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. So talk to us a little bit about Bán Fasa. I recorded a podcast last night with a guest who was calling in from the US, and I was saying that a third of my listeners are in the United States, right? So a big following over there. So for anyone who doesn't understand Bán Fasa, doesn't understand Irish folklore, paganism, I'd love you to educate the masses on all of that, Lorraine, if you could.
Well, Bán Fasa, the Bán Fasa And the Fear Fasa as well, to the lesser extent. So that's the male, the male version. We've been around forever, I think, forever. And Ireland historically has always been, a relatively poor country. So the Bán Fasa's role was the midwife, but also the vet, the doctor, the local GP, the counsellor, the therapist, and everything in between. She was basically the mammy of the village, I suppose, in many ways. So my family came down off the mountains in around about 1700s or thereabouts, and have been working as Bán Fasas for a long time. When I was a little girl, I learned from my great aunt Etna about, she would have been what we call, I suppose, a fairy woman. She spoke to the fairies and all the rest. So she introduced me to the magical side of plants and the healing side of plants. And then my Uncle Brendan would be the Fear Fasa in the family. And so Uncle Brendan, his focus was more about trees and animals and birds and things. So I learned from him. Today, the Bán Fasa's role, it's not really needed anymore, because we have very good doctors and medicine and all the rest. But during COVID, something happened. So before COVID, that pagan aspect of my life was always kind of, jokingly, we kept it in the broom closet, and I was a driver guide and I was very professional, and it was, I had a lot of Americans on my tours and stuff, and it was all very, very professional and tourism and blah, blah, blah. And then COVID happened and it was like overnight, my business died. Mm-hmm. And I had to sell my van, and I'm going around the woods picking certain plants for me to use, hugging certain trees and things like that, going, what in the world am I going to do now? And my friends were like, this, you know, people will want to know this because, of course, we all got outside during COVID. So when COVID re when we reopened after COVID, I started running my first walks, and just bringing people down into the woods. Wasn't even sure if anybody would actually be interested because, as you say, I grew up in Catholic Ireland, and I'm used to being called like a heathen or a devil worshipper or all sorts of weird things. So it was really quite scary opening myself up professionally and telling people, you know, hotel managers and tour operators, well, actually, I'm actually a witch, you know, and send me your customers, I'll bring them down into the woods. But to my absolute delight, when COVID happened and we were all locked in and we were all spending time in the garden and the local park, it did open people's eyes to just how far removed we come from nature, and how badly we needed it. And like the funny thing is, I was actually in Glendalough yesterday, with somebody doing a walk yesterday, and we were walking back toward the monastery, and I was saying to them during the walk about how the monastery had been a sanctuary, a place of peace and things like that, and you know, my guests were kind of, they weren't really understanding it. And I was kind of saying, imagine a time when nature was so wild that the monastic city was a retreat. And we have come so far, we're the other way around now. And it's very difficult for people. Like, people will go outside and they'll go and they'll get their steps, or they'll walk their dog, or they, you know, oh, I have 30 minutes, I need my exercise for the day. But it's not enough to connect us back with nature. We really have to work at it now because it is, there's so little of, it's not wild anymore. So it's not powerful anymore. So, well, it is, but not for most of us. So,
I'm so excited it's so interesting because one of the most actually the most listened episode of the podcast so far was with Phoebe Foran. So it's double the amount of listens than other episodes. And Phoebe is the green witch of the Dodder. So she is, I don't know if you know Phoebe, she has a bit of a brand called Forager. And so she also brings people on foraging walks, but she also has a beauty brand that she's brought out about where she makes lotions and potions, as she calls it.
yep.
And she is she is a green witch, and she's a herbalist, and she is really has her own allotment. And so that episode focused on a solo walk in nature and the importance of kind of getting out into nature. And a big motivation for me doing this podcast is because I had a lot of people coming to me for coaching saying that they wanted to get fit, but they'd no one to go on a walk with, or that they'd no one to kind of go out with. There was this
Ah,
sort of
isn't
fear
that terrible?
perpetuated. It's terrible. And there was this kind of fear perpetuated around women that, we can't be out on our own, or we can't be doing things. But what that means is it's restricting us from nature. And I love a tree hug. I love, I have my dog, and I
Well,
whenever
did
I'm
you know
feeling.
you get the same dopamine boost from a tree, hugging a tree, that you do from hugging a human. So
Well, I'm not, I
it's
mean,
good for
even
you.
more, I think even more. I mean, I know during COVID, when things were tough and when things were scary, I would go out and I would hug a tree, and I would put my forehead against that bark, and I would feel the energy from it, really and truly. And I would feel better. I would absolutely feel better. And I think, if we all connected to nature a little bit more, the world would be a better place. So it's great for you that
Oh,
you have people like
absolutely.
you doing what you're doing,
Well, the wonderful thing about the wonderful thing about being Irish is that we do have this pre-Christian belief here, and essentially our ancestors worshipped the earth. But in that, there's all these other little chapters, if you will. So, for example, with the trees, you know, I would be very fussy which tree I would hug, because under the old Iron Age Brehon laws, there are certain trees that do certain things. So, for example, for your listeners, anybody who's in the creative arts or anything like that, that's the hazel. That's the tree that the druids, the tree of the bards and things, that was the tree of inspiration.
Do you know
Whereas
what?
if you
I'm writing this down because I am a massive Brehon lover. I've read recently just read a book all about the Breton law, and as a celebrant, I do hand fasting ceremonies, so I'm very interested
Wonderful.
in all of this, and I'd love us to talk about more for anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about. But I'm writing it down. So creative, the hazel tree.
The hazel tree. It was the tree of the Philae, the poets of Ireland. So the hazel was the most important. The oak then, of course, is the provider and the protector. It's the tree of strength when you're feeling weak. But for me, I will always go to the elder tree. The elder gets its name from the Vikings, who called it Ildarmor, the elder mother, because it's got this the power to heal, the power to nurse, and the power to kill. So very powerful tree. So in the old Breton laws, we had these different trees, as you may have read, the laws of the neighborhood, as they were so endearingly called. And we had the noble trees, we had the commoners, the lower divisions, and then of course the forest floor. But in those different sections and all those different trees, they mean different things. So for example, if you were going through a change in your life and you're absolutely terrified, and perhaps you're on your own for the first time, and you're taking those first steps into a new world, a new life, that's the yew tree. Because the yew, for our ancestors, saw the yew as being completely sacred. It was this tree that could live forever. A yew tree can live to be 9,000 years old, and yet totally filled with the most toxic poison you can imagine. So a tree filled with death that can live forever. So it's a tree that helps you kind of resurrect yourself, and reinvent yourself. So for example, if I was a warrior who thought I was going to live on forever, I was going to die on the battlefield, but I would be remembered forever in song and poem. But something terrible has happened, Ariana. I've been injured, not enough to kill me, but enough to stop me from ever fighting again. I'll be, it's a horrible thing. This is who I am, and now I'm not that anymore. So my druid gives me a yew staff to carry. The idea being that energy of the yew will go into me, and it'll help me reinvent myself, the skill set that I have, but reinvent it in a new way. So now perhaps I'll be an advisor or a trainer or coach or something like that.
Oh my gosh.
The trees really, the trees really do have a way about them, an
And
energy of their
these
own.
trees are are they in abundance in Ireland? You know what I mean? I mean, would it be difficult to find a yew tree kind of thing, or would they be?
Well, no, you see, the yew tree, actually, of all the trees, is one of the easiest to find, because when our ancestors first came to this island, and it was covered in a temperate Celtic rainforest, similar to the forest they'd have around Washington, for example, in America, they were looking for places to live and worship. And they saw, because of this poison in the yew tree, the ground underneath the yew can often be quite clear of any other growth, brambles or whatnot. So they also knew, though, that they were so poisonous, it's not an ideal place to raise a toddler, for example. So they became the worship sites. And when these druids then converted to Christianity later, thousands of years later, they built their churches in their druidic yew groves. So wherever you go in Ireland, or England and Scotland and Wales for that matter, and you find old churches, there will always be yew trees growing in them. Always, because that's the idea of resurrection. Again, it continued through into the Christian faith. But unfortunately, Ireland has the lowest tree cover in Europe. It does. And there's the actual number, there's a lot of arguments about it, because the Irish government will include Quailte plantations, and anyone from outside of Ireland, a Quailte plantation is essentially a crop. It's a tree. It's a Norwegian tree. It's not native. It's grown very quickly in our climate, and it's clear felled after a number of years. So our tree cover is about 15% in Ireland, but about 11% of that are the plantations. So the real number is actually much lower. And so it's only around 3.5% or thereabouts. And of our ancient woodlands, only 0.01%
Oh
remain.
God, Lorraine, that's so sad.
It's a combination of colonization and poverty, I suppose, because our focus for a long time was about growing food. We were such a poor country. We needed land to grow food. But yes, it is. It's really sad because we were a tree people. We were a tree, you know, our language was influenced by trees, our names, our place names, our first alphabet, the Om alphabet. And when you look at those Brehon laws and you realize that you and I, as women, are worth, you know, we have an honor price in the Celtic law. So I'm a crone. I'm a postmenopausal woman. So I am worth one cow. As a younger lady, when I was still capable of childbirth, I was worth two cows. A man is only ever worth one cow, though. He's like basically a donkey. unfortunately, I'm sorry, gentlemen. But the oak was worth two and a half cows. It was worth more than a person. So you can just see how far we have changed, that the oak tree was worth more than, and to cut down certain trees, you actually could end up, you know, being the death sentence being applied.
Wow. Because the hawthorn, we haven't touched on the hawthorn tree yet. And the hawthorn is the sacred fairy tree in Ireland, right?
It is. And there's lots of stories as to why this one is, but I think for today's chat, we could stand at the hawthorn and talk for an hour about it, but to really bring it down, I think it comes down to, for me anyway, I think it comes down to when it flowers and when it blooms, and when it fruits. Because as you mentioned, St. Bridget's Day there, and of course St. Bridget for the pagans is Imbolc, and Imbolc being one of the 5,000 year old quarter festivals that are celebrated here. The two most important ones historically, I suppose, will be Bealtaine in May and Samhain or Halloween in October. And these marked the start and the end of kind of the fighting season, foraging season, you know, everything that happened in the sunny side of the year, and then the other side's rest. So at Bealtaine, the hawthorn tree flowers, and there's a particular scent that the flower gives off, and it's quite a musky, sweet scent. It's very lovely, and you're going to laugh now, but it's said to smell like the scent of a ripe woman.
Ooh,
a ripe woman, right? But Bealtaine is also a massive fertility festival, because if you, in the old way, it was thought that the gods got together that night and she becomes pregnant with the coming harvest. So the tree smells like a ripe goddess, essentially. Wow. And then you rock forward 6 months to Samhain, a time of death and renewal and all of that. And the goddess now is the landscape is now, she has turned into an older woman. But instead, at this point now, the tree gives us food. Hawthorn berries and hawthorn leaves were so commonly eaten. They were actually known as the bread and cheese tree as well.
Wow.
So at a time of death, it gives us food, and at a time of life, it smells of sexy times. So it's kind of, you know, I think, you know, like the fairies of Ireland, they were once worshipped as gods by our pagan ancestors. Yeah. So this tree was linked with the gods, really. And it's lovely all these centuries later, it's still seen as a sacred tree.
Totally. And I mean, I love the story of the European Union, how, you know, we had to we had to go back to the we were granted money from the European Union to build a road, but there was a hawthorn tree in the way.
Do you know, Ariana, they were absolutely right
they
to
were
reroute that route.
Absolutely right. Absolutely. So what happened, for anyone listening who doesn't know, there was a hawthorn tree, and people who had been contracted to do the work would refuse to cut it down, because people were saying that it was a sacred fairy tree, that blood of fairies, white blood of fairies, had been found at the bottom of the tree, and it was supposed to be a meeting point for fairies, right?
That's correct.
So they decided, right, that we wouldn't want to do it. So we had to go, the Irish government had to go back to the European Union and say, we need a bit more money, because we have to find a new route around this tree, because we won't cut it down because the fairies live there. And they granted us the money, right? Because they had to respect our beliefs and they had to respect our culture. And I absolutely just adore that story. I think it's incredible.
Well, do you remember the DeLorean car?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the DeLorean, of course, Back to the Future and all the rest, that should have been a huge car, huge, with all that marketing it got. But you know what they did, Ariana? That factory was actually here in Ireland, the DeLorean.
No way.
It's up north. And they cut down a fairy tree to build that factory.
No
That's why
way.
there's no DeLoreans
You're
anymore.
joking me. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
So we, you gotta look. I mean, would you cut down a fairy tree?
No, I would never cut down a
No, I
fairy
wouldn't
tree.
either.
No,
No way.
not at all. You have to
No way.
respect the fairies.
You do.
But people listening to this might think we're mad, right? And I know, like, obviously, look, there's people who, all over the world who listen to this podcast. But having been in America and things like that, people say, "Oh my God, you guys got the fairies and the Laputians there." You know, like they really do think that they're there. And I mean, they are. I mean, you mentioned your aunt who was
Fairy woman.
the fairy woman. Yeah. So like, talk to us a little bit about fairies, if you can. What's
Well,
your
fairies. Yeah, no. Well, I mean, the fairies. I was always brought up to believe that, fairies. It was very important you didn't annoy them, you didn't upset them, you didn't anger them. They're not like Disney fairies. They were here before us essentially, and we, like the story goes that when the sons of Mill, whom any native Irish person would be descended from, this is the Celts arriving in Ireland, like, they said that they would divide the land in two, with the Tuatha Dé Danann, the magical people. So the Tuatha Dé Danann went under the ground, the sons of Mill stayed on top, and we would worship them as gods. And that's what happened for hundreds and hundreds of years. And then when Christianity came, then we couldn't quite let go of them. And so they became the she of the land, the spirit of the land. And then it became the fairies. So essentially when somebody like myself talking about fairies, we're talking about the spirit of the land. We're talking about this, like the literal spirits that will come out and will either attack you or reward you perhaps. And there's lots of things you're supposed to do. Like, for example, Aetna would always leave out a bowl of milk and some food on Beltane night, and the same on Samhain night for the fairies. There were certain plants that we would always have had in the garden that attract the fairies in, because if the fairies are in your house, if the fairies live about you, you will always have a very positive energy around your place, and you will be protected from certain negative energies and things. There are some bad fairies that you don't want to attract, and that's again the hazel coming in there now, because the hazel, if you use a hazel walking stick, any of them, they will be afraid of it and they'll run away from
Right. My
it.
goodness. Because I know when I did the foraging work with Bibi, she got us all to pick a little flower or to pick something up, a stone or a pine cone. And then when we came to the hawthorn tree, she set us all to give the gift to the fairies and to thank them and to say, you have to ask permission from them if you want to touch them and all that kind of, if you want to touch the leaves and all this. And but I mean, like, it's just interesting because in so many different cultures around the world, particularly in indigenous cultures, if you look at sort of African or if you look at Native American cultures, if you look at Aboriginal cultures, I
Iceland would
mean,
be another one, the
Iceland, yeah,
Vikings.
absolutely. I mean, and particularly in places in South America, tribal places, I mean, they would be absolutely respectful of the spirit of the land. They would all have their own words and their own identities for what we're essentially talking about, where we call them the fairies. But I think St. Patrick's Day and leprechauns and the green hat and,
Well, the
kind of
leprechauns,
like.
let me tell you about the leprechauns, because they're actually a relatively new invention. They have nothing to do with fairies at all. They come from the Wicklow Hills, the
Okay.
leprechauns, Shillelagh, specifically.
Right.
In Shillelagh, there was a tribe there, and these guys were quite powerful tribe, actually very, very powerful tribe, and they developed a form of stick fighting. With it's like a martial art essentially, and extremely, extremely deadly, because the blackthorn tree is incredibly light but also really, really strong. So it makes amazing weapons, cudgels and whatnot. So this tribe, apparently living in the wilds of this part of Wicklow, they found their territory being encroached bit by bit by bit by the Normans. And the Normans being the Anglo-Normans who come from France and England and were taking over Ireland. So they used to drop down out of the trees and attack these Normans. But they obviously were wearing camouflage and things like that. So they were dressed in green with sticks and all the rest. Green ninjas. But it didn't stop the Normans. But the Normans started talking about these almost paranormal like creatures that would fall out of the trees and fight with sticks. But then as the things started getting smaller and smaller, these guys stopped. They didn't really mix outside of their clan, outside of their tribe. They stayed within the forest. And so as people settled around the forest, you know, they'd hear stories about these people that lived in the woods, and they these people who were very good at fixing things and repairing things. So they would leave out maybe some pots and pans to be repaired, and they would leave out a bundle of food or some clothes or something as payment. If they left out money, they would just find the money then, you know, under a tree somewhere in a little pot or something, you know. So they would then hang up little sticks like the shillelagh sticks outside their door to encourage, you know, kind of going, hey, look over here, there's a job for you and some food to pay for it. So, but this tribe's getting smaller and smaller, and of course there's no fresh blood going into the tribe, so there's a little bit of, I suppose, incest going on and things. So they're maybe not getting the nutrients they need. They're spending so much time in the forest. They're getting smaller and maybe stunted with the stick and the pot of gold coins hidden under the tree. And this is where the legend comes from.
That is amazing. I have never heard that before. That's incredible. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And
that's where the leprechauns come from. And like we probably, you know, like it's amazing because there is a guy in Shillelagh. His name is Liam. He is the last stick maker of Shillelagh. A lovely man. And when I was a driver guide, I would bring people to him. Wow. And, you know, and he tells this story beautifully. Wow. And but he, you know, he we've often kind of wondered, because during the 1800s, when the Irish were going to America, you know, some of the lads would go over to America and they would bring their shillelagh sticks with them. Yeah. And of course, they're in New York and they're, you know, fighting whatever. And or they're hired to protect railway workers, and the railway workers then are kept safe from Native American attacks by these Irish people. So the railway guys basically headhunted every shillelagh stick fighter in Ireland, brought them all over to America. Stick fighting doesn't exist in Ireland anymore, but it's still quite large, quite big in America. Oh. But we often wondered, if the stick fighters were still in Ireland, would the leprechaun have ever existed?
Wow. And what does the word leprechaun mean? Where does that word come from?
It's just a nonsense word, leprechaun. Yeah, it's just a nonsense word.
Because I know, I remember the shillelagh. I remember Micheline Flynn from The Quiet Man had a shillelagh, a nice stick to beat the lovely lady out. The lovely lady with was the famous line from that, which I always remember. But yeah, the shillelagh sticks. Beautiful, beautiful sticks, actually, in terms of actually.
They're gorgeous. Yeah, they're gorgeous. And they're a lovely walking stick for, you know, when you're hiking and things as well, because they are quite light. But I love the fact, I think it's so Irish, Ariana. I think it's so Irish that it's here. No, Your Honor, it's just a walking stick, when actually it's a deadly weapon in disguise. You know? I love that. And you know, and like the reason why they're always black is because they were hidden up the chimney and stuff, you know. So they're still painted black to honor that time when they were hidden up chimney.
Wow,
they're a little historical artifact in their own.
So cool. And I mean, just in terms of Breton law, so for anyone who doesn't understand what we're talking about, so for me, I'm desperately sad that we don't live in Ireland anymore that is governed by Breton law, because I just think it was one of the most beautiful socially democratic kind of countries, you know, in terms of
amazing.
Yeah. Oh, amazing. And you can see that sort of existing in other in Scandinavian countries and things like that. But we were a nation built upon fairness, and we had sort of druids and kings, but we had something like, what, 350 kingdoms that we all like.
Petty kingships. Yes.
Yeah, we had lots of kingships. We had lots of kind of harmony. But as you say, there was honor price. So everything had an honor price. And there was a story that I love, you know, that I remember reading, and it was sort of like, if you had a cat, right, and if your cat was a cat that caught mice, it would have a higher price on a price than a cat that just sort of lazed about in the sun looking pretty. But if your cat happened to make its way into the neighbor's house and it happened to take some food from the pot on the stove, you would only owe them money if the door had been closed and the cat had forced its way in. And if you hadn't have left the lid off the pot, then you would owe them money. But if you had left the door open and the lid off the pot and the cat took the food, then that's on you kind of thing, you know.
Well, no, I'd ha yeah, and they make perfect sense. I remember, I think a lot of us still do use the Breton laws in some ways. I mean, like last year, my chickens got out of my garden, went into my neighbor's garden, and ate his entire salad beds, the entire lot, and I was obviously horrified and very apologetic. So for the next 2 weeks, I gave him the eggs because my
Wow.
hens had been nourished by his salad.
Love it.
So yeah,
Brilliant.
so he ends up with loads of eggs instead of salad.
Oh, brilliant.
And like, if I had a hive and you had flowers,
Yeah.
I would owe you some honey, you
Yeah.
know.
Yeah.
So
But also, I love that idea that if the bees swarmed, that you couldn't stop them from swarming. If they were in
it's like
your
bees
land
are on
and they
their
were
own.
leaving, yeah, so they were shared, the bees were shared between, the four farmers or whatever. And but it was just incredible. I mean, women were treated very, very fairly, if you were
Very fairly.
very,
And
very fairly. Yeah.
this is the thing now, actually, because Ariana, off the back of our St. Bridget's Day event that we were all involved in, me talking about St. Bridget, and actually talking about the goddess and people wanting to know more about the goddess
Yeah.
aspect.
Yeah.
And that actually has led me now to, right now, I've just done one and I have another one next week. I'm doing test walks right now because I'm bringing in a new walk that focuses on goddesses and Irish
Amazing.
warrior women and things like that,
Amazing.
because we have these incredible stories, but an awful lot of them are very much focused on heroes and like, look, I mean, it was like the Iliad and all of these, you know, it's always about the hero. We lived through the hero era, but it's absolutely amazing. How and when and why women come into these stories. For example, we have a character here who you will know very well, and many of your listeners will have heard of, a guy called Fionn Macool.
Yeah.
And Fionn Macool was known as the greatest warrior ever had. He was supposed to have lived around 150 AD or thereabouts. We still tell stories about him. Every kid in Ireland will hear stories about Fionn Macool. But could you name me Fionn's mother? You
No.
know, and who raised him? Like, this is the thing. His mother gave birth to him while she was on the run, and she hands the baby over to a druid and a warrior, a female druid, her sister called Bovel, and a female warrior called Leath Lucra, Lucra of the Grey. And they raised him in secret in the forest until he was about 7 years old, and then handed him over to the poets, because under the Breton laws, you could not kill a poet. So that was to keep him safe until he reached maturity and he could avenge his father's death and all of that and become the warrior that we would all listen and, you know, we'd all learn about.
Wow.
So
Wow.
there's like this idea of this, like Leath the Grey, for example, this solo warrior, the greatest tracker, the Fianna, the warriors of ancient Ireland had. And she, you know, she basically left her warrior tribe to look after this very special baby until it was old enough, you know.
Wow.
That's so
Why was his
cool.
mother on the run?
Because her husband had been killed. His husband was the leader of the Fianna,
Right.
and Cool, obviously Fionn Mac Cool, Fionn's son of Cool. So Cool had been killed by a rival, and Gal MacMurna, the one-eyed MacMurna, the one-eyed son of Myrna, and he found out that Murren was pregnant, and he knew that if she gave birth to a child, that the child would try and avenge their father's death. So there was a death wish put on pair of them. So yeah, and these brilliant stories, but we don't actually. So now I'm going around Glendalough, researching Glendalough as a potential place to tell these stories, because even in Glendalough, we know it as this very famous, very ancient monastic city, but actually it has a pre-Christian story. It was a Lunasa site. It was a very, very sacred place. It was associated with Druids. There was a Druidic temple there. You know, there's holy wells there. So it's it's telling the stories of these goddesses and warrioresses in this lovely place associated with Christianity, but telling the pre-Christian story as well.
Wow.
So
that's amazing. Yeah. And I would absolutely book up to that to that talk in a second, because sorry, you're hiding me. Hang on one second. There we go. So yeah, I was just in Prague there at the weekend with a friend of mine, and we did a bike tour, and we were told, she recommended to us that there was a young girl who had just started a new tour in Prague called, it was like a feminist female tour of Prague. So it was going around all of the, talking about like the, you know, women instead of the men, right? Because there's all loads of men things in Prague, but not very many. And there's like Stalin and Hitler and Frank Kafka and, you know, whatever.
Yes.
So I was actually thinking how great that would be to have something like that in Ireland. And I was just driving in town the other day, and I was driving down the back of the Guinness's Castle, and I just happened to see the sign that was on the wall, and it said Anna Skeffington. I can't remember her first name, but something.
Anna Skeffington, yes.
Yeah, Skeffington. Smash these windows, right?
Yes.
And that was like the plaque that's on the wall. And I just went, well, fair feckin' play to you. Well done, you know, as I was driving past. But I was thinking, I Googled then to see if there was any kind of feminist tours of Dublin, and there isn't actually. And I actually think that would be so good.
Terrible.
I know. And my friend of mine was just on a walking tour, but he ended up hearing about the Darkie Kelly. I don't know if you know the story of Darkie Kelly. So Darkie Kelly there's a pub named after Darkie Kelly, but she was a madam in a brothel. She was a you know, kind of prolific businesswoman, but she was in a relationship with one of the card players from the Hellfire Club underneath the Christchurch crypt.
Yes.
And they stole her baby and sacrificed her baby on the altar. So she went on a killing spree and killed loads of men. And then she was the first woman burnt at the stake in Ireland. But you know, they found all of these men. I was like, raw, go on, woman. But like, there's, you know, there's incredible, incredible stories. And you know, we have in recent times, obviously with Saint Bridget, or with the pirate queen that we have here.
Oh, Grace, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Yeah, Grace the pirate queen. And you know, actually coming into Dublin Airport, they were highlighting a lot of our famous Irish kind of like warriors and things like that for a while.
We're coming into our own, and I think like during in 2016 there with the centenary celebrations of the War of Independence and stuff, and like Hannah Skeffington Smith was a suffragette who fought as a rebel.
Yeah.
And you know, so, and then with St. Bridget, it's kind of doubled down like this, the you know, the absence of stories. And like one of the things that I'm always straining to press on people is that, you know, I don't, because I have had some people say, oh, my husband wouldn't come on the tour. And I think that's really sad, because you know, like, it's not about him or us or them or whatever. It's just that, you know, women's stories have been left out.
Totally. And Imelda May is coming out with a documentary now recently, I've seen, with about the Yeats sisters. So obviously,
right, you know,
so what were they called, Lily and Lottie or something? They were kind of nicknames, but obviously their brothers, William Butler and Jack and John, and their father, an artist, you know, we'll talk about them, but these two women were incredible women in their own right, and incredibly creative, and had their own businesses, and you know, were pioneers in so many ways. And yeah, why were we not hearing about them, you know?
I know it is the same with these Celtic myths and legends. There's all these really cool myths and legends about female warriors and female goddesses. I mean, one of my favorites to talk about has to be the Morrigan. She was the battle queen of Ireland.
Yeah.
This postmenopausal woman goddess with her graying hair bound into nine plaits with crow feathers on the end, red war paint across her eyes, took no prisoners, a total badass bitch. She was amazing. And she can shapeshift into a crow. I mean, what's cooler than that?
Wow.
You know, and if you go into the GPO There's a beautiful iron wrought iron statue there of Cuchulainn, another great Irish warrior. Lots of stories about Cuchulainn. But Cuchulainn was trained by a woman and her
Wow.
daughter, and defeated by the Morrigan. Because if you go and look at that statue, you'll see sitting on Cuchulainn's shoulder is a crow. That's the Morrigan. She, so
Wow.
like it's she's brilliant, and
Yeah.
like there's, but we don't hear their stories.
No,
It's,
maybe
and like.
it's because they were afraid. I mean, I wonder, I wonder if it's if it comes to an awful lot to sort of education stories being written down and stories being kind of passed on that.
Definitely,
Yeah.
definitely. And like we I like I get I do get people say to me a lot of the time, well, you must hate the church, you must hate this, the church, the monks moving in, taking paganism and stuff. Look, I think first of all, Celtic Christianity was a thing. It was a crossover between
Yeah.
pagan and Christian, and that's why we still have holy wells and rag trees and saints that were goddesses and stuff. But also, if it wasn't for the monks writing these stories down, we wouldn't have them today. So we do have to credit them for saving some of these old pagan stories. But some of the editing is rather hilarious, I have to say, very, very clumsy. Like Cuchulainn's mother, Dechtira, for example. Cuchulainn is she had Cuchulainn's father is the sun god Lu. But in one of the trans one of the translations and one of the old books, Dectera, basically she disappears. She goes off on her own and comes back to her brother pregnant, and he's horrified, and he's like, "I gotta marry you off now." And she's like, "No, it's the baby of a god. He will be the greatest warrior ever." And he's like, "Yes, well, you're still getting it married." And on the day of her marriage, she has a miscarriage in the morning, but that night, in her marital bed with her new husband, she has a new bit, she gets pregnant again,
Wow.
but it's in the confines of marriage, so it's all okay.
Wow. Oh, hilarious. Oh my
So you can
God.
see
Right.
some editing going on there,
Right. Right. Okay. Got it.
but like but we do, look, I think part of the reason why we weren't included in the stories is, to be fair, Christianity is very patriarchal. It is a very patriarchal religion, and it creates patriarchal societies. And I don't even know if it was a conscious consideration to leave us out of the story, or if it was just that ego was so big that it wasn't
Yeah,
even like.
totally. But also because women were, women weren't educated. Men were educated first. Men were sent off to the schools first, right? So they were the ones that were writing the stories, telling the stories. And I suppose what's gonna,
Histories
I'm
written by the
more
victors.
interested in female stories. Men are gonna be more interested in male stories, and that's just kind of
This.
like, and also, but also there was probably some fear going on. I think some of the Irish goddesses, the
Oh, they're
goddesses in the
very
Maria were.
sexual and primal,
Yeah,
and yeah.
and they were probably scary.
Oh, yeah. Like, there's a cave in Roscommon where the Morrigan lives, and it is, when you go down into it, it's just this beautiful, naturally formed vagina and womb, and it's beautiful and it's completely natural. And this is where the Fianna would go, and they would be reborn. They'd go into this cave for a ritual and be reborn. This was the womb of the island. This was the womb of the Earth Mother. What do the Christians call it? The gateway to hell.
Oh,
So yeah, so definitely,
wow.
but when you go around our island, you see this all over the place. Like there's in Kerry, there's the Paps of Annwn, two mountains. Somebody at some point went, "Oh, look, boobs," and built these Cairn nipples on top, and one of the things I do in Glendalough is I show them the huge Sheilinigig in the landscape. Now, for those listeners from America, Sheilinigig is a fertility symbol that you find on a lot of really old churches. And to be honest, it does kind of look like a pornographic ET. She's holding her lady bits wide open. And the idea was you touch her lady bits for fertility, for a boost of fertility or whatever, but there's a massive one in Glendalough, and it's the
Wow.
landscape itself. It's
Wow.
waterfall and mountains, but when you look in a
Yes.
certain way, you can see it as a,
Wow.
giant vagina in the landscape.
Wow. That's amazing. And yeah, I mean, I just love the stories of like sort of the Breithaun Law in terms of, again, like that, the fairness of
Women.
women in terms of weddings. You know,
And
the hand
divorce.
fasting, the hand, yeah, and divorce. So the hand fasting was if you wanted to get married, you would have your hands fasted for a
A
year
year
and
and a
one
day.
day, and then you would come back after a year and a day and be asked if you were happy to continue the wedding, the marriage, and if you weren't, you could take 10 steps away from each other and you were essentially divorced. And the women who came, if you came with holdings or land, you left with
You
that,
kept them, yeah.
so there was no like, and like there was different levels, of course. There was kind of caste system-y type things sort of going on,
Yeah,
but
depending on how
again,
many
it was
cows
all
you
around
owned.
fairness. Yeah, but as well, what I love about it is it was a meritocracy. So if you were a king, for example, if you got an injury, if you had an injury to your face, you could no longer be king, right? So you would be back down to being a pauper, but a pauper
I
could
love, I like the
but
one
become a
where,
king.
yeah, with the one with the chieftain and the king having red blotches on his cheeks because it showed that he overindulged too much.
Oh my God.
It's so good. It's so
Wow.
good.
It was so
But
good.
like,
It was so clever. It was just so, but it was so, it was, you could build yourself up to be a king. And, it wasn't based off of nepotism. It wasn't based off of,
Oh,
birthright or anything
no,
like that.
yeah.
If you were someone who was strong and good, but also if you had a musical talent, if you were a poet, if you had higher honor price, so it was that thing of
This is
like
it,
striving for
like,
betterness and
oh
ambition for
yeah.
it. Yeah.
Well, yesterday, when I was in Glendalough, I was with there with some musicians, and we were talking about on the way back, we were talking about, just are you getting many gigs, this kind of thing,
Yeah.
and how much you get, and was it worth it driving all that way, and you're only going to get paid 200 euro for the night, and you have to drive home then 3 in the morning and stuff, and it's hard work and blah blah, and we were laughing because in Celtic Ireland, which we had just left, having left Glendalough behind us, now we're going into the modern world again. But in Celtic Ireland, we would have been members of the Filí, and the Filí were a special caste of their own, and they were there. They stood side by side with the royalty and the priests or the druids or whatever, and they were considered to be so important. And like we have this wonderful storytelling tradition here in Ireland, and this wonderful storytelling both in speech and in song and in poem. And it is quite sad that it's not valued the same way it was. But then I suppose, you can come and you can do a walk with me, or sit down by the fire and listen to some stories with me. But you're not going to find me online, so not that much, so like I'm not going to be on TikTok or anything like that. So there's a new breed of storytellers out there now, but
I
I
know.
do think it's sad really that the storytellers and the poets and stuff that we don't get the same, respect
Yeah.
that would have been there, because I get it all the time. I get people, hotel management or event venues, or whatever, going, "Oh my God, I love your stories. I want to hear more. I want you to come and do storytelling. My guests would love you." And I go, "Okay, great. There's my price." And they go, "Oh," it's like, "What, did you want me to come for free?" Like,
Course.
we all gotta eat,
For sure. And I don't know if you saw the clip, Cillian Murphy, obviously he's up for an Oscar and has been winning the awards left, right, and center. He was asked in an interview recently why did he think that there was such a flurry of successful Irish actors and creators kind of coming out of Ireland at the moment. And his answer was, we're a nation of storytellers and we are a nation of poets and writers. And, we've always been good at telling a story. That's in our history. That's part of who we are. And I suppose, in a way, the actors are the storytellers of the generation. Maybe they are being sort of recognized in that way. But I think that the folklore and it's so utterly fascinating. And I think, there has been a fear mongering, I suppose, around witches and the bad
Of
reputation that witches
course.
kind of get. But I actually do think that that is kind of softening now when there is people like
Oh,
you, who is a self-proclaimed and proud witch, and people like Phoebe Foran, who are, and I would be, I mean, I recently listened to the podcast called Witch, which was, delving into the very, very unfair treatment of women who were burned at the stake because maybe they were just being vocal or outspoken or they had identified something wrong in the patriarchy, and suddenly they
yeah.
were then being blasted as witches. And I think, we have a lot of apologies apology that needs to be done. There's a lot of women who were tried very, very unfairly, and you know, there's a huge amount of work that needs to be done to unravel that awful past of literally genocide against many, many women
Oh, absolutely, without question. I mean, like, if you look at you know, if you look, if you just take our country, just taking our country, you know, there were five witch trials in Ireland, and all of the women accused were all sentenced to death. Now, they were generally held within the, for want of a better word, the English towns, and they were English women, the most famous being like Dame Alice Keitler down in Kilkenny, a Norman woman, you know. She had married very well three times, and each husband died strangely. but that's why she was accused of witchcraft. You know, the local bishop was pissed off with her. Outside of the English towns in Ireland, it was the Ban Fasa. Mm-hmm. And only one Ban Fasa was ever accused of witchcraft. And her name was Biddy Early. She's a Clare woman. And Biddy was a very powerful woman in her own right, also married multiple times. But it was the local priest and the local doctor that accused her of witchcraft. Now, nobody would stand against her, and eventually the case was dropped. And she did become friends with the priest in the end. But it was, again, that patriarchal thing of shutting this woman down. And this woman was a very busy doctor, midwife, medicine woman. The entire community used her constantly. And apparently, according to the legends, that they used to be queues down around her cottage, people waiting to go in and get their medicines. But the doctors wanted her because they wanted, the doctors wanted to get rid of her because the doctor wanted them coming to him. Mm-hmm. But you cannot pay the doctor with a bag of potatoes or a bottle of poutine or, you know, or a few eggs. And the priest wanted her because she was telling stories about the fairies and how the fairies were giving her her medicine and things. And he did not want that, you know. Wow. So and like the really sad thing is when you actually look at some of these banfasses and some of these witches and some of these people who were, you know, shut down and kept quiet. It comes back to me. It always comes back to me, to even just the word pagan. It simply means country dweller, somebody who worships the earth. Right. And as a pagan for my whole life, like I remember being in the 80s, being terrified of you know, the ozone layer and watching buildings being torn down. And, you know, growing up in the 80s in Dublin, there was an awful lot of dereliction. But then in the early 90s, seeing the city building up as the Celtic Tiger roars in. And like, this is going to sound so silly, but, you know, in my memories of Dublin, of old building sites where buildings had fallen down. And, you know, the butterfly tree, the beautiful purple flowers.
Yes.
They used to grow all over those sites.
No.
And you see butterflies all over the place. And I remember being very upset about this and literally people going, what is wrong with you? Like, what is butterfly? We're going to get jobs. We're going to get buildings. We're going to get, you know, what is wrong with you? You know, like you're mad. And I remember having a big argument with my dad about everything. And he was like, you know, if we keep going the way you want us, nobody will be able to eat a steak. And I was like, now, just want to put out there, I'm not a vegetarian. I am a carnivore. I love a good steak. But I was like, Dad, it's not about if I keep going, we won't be able to eat steak. It's capitalism keeps going, we won't be able to eat steak.
Yeah.
And you know, and now here we are years later. And I find that people like my brother-in-law, for example, apologized to me and said, we should have listened to you all 10 years ago. And, you know, we're seeing the effects of it now. And I think that's why more people are turning back to this pagan ideals, pagan lifestyles and witchcraft and things like that, because it's honoring what really the only thing that matters, which is the earth. And that's really, when it comes down to it, the only thing that matters.
100%.
And this is honoring it. So if you're honoring, if a pagan or a witch, their God is literally the land. So they're not going to pollute it. They're not going to put litter on it. They're not going to destroy it. They're going to honor it and look after it. And even if they do raise crops, and even if they do build a building, it's going to be an eco building. It's going to work with it. So I am absolutely delighted that just in the last 5 years, paganism, witchcraft, shamanism, druidism, naturism, all of these new isms coming out. I think it's brilliant. And I am absolutely, hilariously, I think after all of these years working in hotels, working as a driver guide, working in customer service, that's secretly doing all the witchcraft stuff in the background. And here we are now in this post-COVID new world where people want to know this stuff, and I'm in this perfect position to tell the stories.
Amazing. I'm so
Yeah.
happy for you because my gosh, you deserve it. You've got so many stories, and as I'm listening to you, I want to know more. I want to know what you know. I want to know, where can I learn all of this stuff? And I remember when I read the book recently that around Brehon Law, which I again as I've always been interested in, and I definitely have witchy tendencies as well. And I remember reading it and saying, declaring to my friends in work one day, I was like, I definitely would have been a druid in a past life, And they were like, they burst out laughing, and they said, oh my God, Ariana, the things you say, they said you should put that on a t-shirt. But I was like, when I look at druids, because I'm a celebrant and I'm a coach and I help people and I'm like, I write poetry.
Turn out now, druids, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, that's all the things that they did, right? And like the druids essentially were the right hand man of the king, but they were the only own the kings, and because there were 350 kingdoms in Ireland, the only people that were really allowed to roam the land sort of freely were the kings and the druids, right? They had like a pass,
And the storytellers.
and storytellers, yeah, and storytellers, and yeah, and I love that whole kind of thing about people, the innkeepers, how they if they had a bit of land and if they were able to welcome the druids and the
All
kings in that
the
they
laws
had.
of hospitality
The
and
laws of
yeah.
hospitality, like, oh my God, just so it's so interesting. But yeah, so the druids were the ones who kind of married people, but they also made a lot of the decisions about things. But they were really kind of governed by the people, weren't they? So if they were
Oh
seen to
yeah.
be unfair, they would be punished by the people if they felt that they. And I also loved as well stories of like if you were someone who was a little bit poor, you could essentially pawn your jewels, pawn your goodwear if you needed money for something. But if your daughter or your son was getting married, the person who you pawned
Yeah.
the jewels to had to give
Had
them
to
back
give
to
them back.
you for that
Yes.
day, for that one
Yeah.
day, so that you wouldn't be embarrassed not wearing your finest jewels. And I mean, they're just beautiful. Now, I'm sure it wasn't all great. I'm sure there was, but even the thing of, there was no death that the when someone who if someone murdered someone, for example, it wasn't an eye for an eye.
Oh
It was
yeah, no, not an eye for an eye.
No,
No,
but not an
no.
eye for, and I love that it was like some of the worst punishment was like you would be put into a boat with no oars and you'd be pushed out to sea. And if you made it to the land, then that God obviously felt that, or you
Yeah, you
made
were
it back to
forgiven.
it. Yeah.
I know. There's
Incredible.
some absolutely fantastic reels. Like we have down here, we have a guy called Saint Aidan, a character down here who built the cathedral in Ferns. And apparently, there's a story about how all the bees in Ireland had died. And Saint Aidan brought them over from Wales. And like this is just this funny little story about Saint Aidan goes over to Wales to under Saint David. He was learning and he tried to leave Saint David. The bees kept following back. But what the historians have said to us about this story is that actually what the bees represent, wisdom and everything associated with the druids, the Brehon Laws and all the rest, and that Aidan's bringing them to Ireland. They had kind of been lost in Ireland and now he's bringing them back to Ireland,
Right.
but you're even seeing like that the idea that for because of course this is the new Christian religion coming in, so this is essentially marketing, right? So in the old marketing way, they're going, right, well, everybody was mad for their bees and the Brehon Laws and everything, right? So we have to tie it in somehow. We have to link them together, so make the old religion linked in with the Brehon Laws. And like what I think is really, really, really sad actually is they almost did bring the Brehon Laws back, but when we were such a poor country that they thought it would be too expensive to overhaul
No.
the legal system. But we did have a trial down in Ferns. Anybody who ever visits Wexford who's interested in their history will know that Ferns was the home of a guy called Dermot McMurrough. Dermot McMurrough, of course, was down as the most hated man in history because he's known as the man who brought the English to Ireland, right? And he was a petty king who under the Brehon Laws refused to pay an honor price. Because of a woman who had left her husband, and she
Right.
came down and she was hanging out with him in his house. They were childhood friends, and he was told he had to pay the honor price, to her husband because they'd embarrassed the husband. And he said, no, we're not lovers. We're just friends. I'm not paying the honor price. It's nothing to do with me. She showed up here basically, and Because of that, he was kicked out of Ireland, and he came
Wow.
back 2 years later with all the Normans.
What?
And the Normans, of course, brought in this new legal system. And unfortunately, the Brehon Laws, while they were still
Oh.
practiced outside of the Norman towns, still, even when Cromwell was here and stuff, that the
Yeah.
Brehon Laws were still a thing. Maybe one
Well,
day
this
we'll
is it.
see.
I mean, I'm a big fan of Holly Cairns from the Social Democrats, and
Yeah.
maybe that some of their policies certainly seem to be, hopefully they might get in. She's only 33 years of age. She's one of the youngest leaders of a party started by Cathy Murphy and Roisin Shorthall. So hopefully, if the Social Democrats get into power, there might be some more social democracy going on, bringing back that idea of what the
That
Brehons
should be
were all about.
fantastic.
Yeah.
It'd be fantastic.
Oh my God, Lorraine, I could talk to you. And just, I mean, in terms of all of this information that you have, I mean, where have you accrued it over the, I mean, is it just from stories? I mean, and also, can I just ask, you said about your father sort of having arguments with your father, but was it from your mother's side then,
Very much my
Uncle
mother's side.
Brendan and whatever?
Very much,
Okay.
yes. No, my father's like, any of your listeners from Dublin will probably have known my father. Liam O'Dwyer was his name. So dad was a very fantastic designer. He was a publican and a restaurateur, and he brought a new way of being to Dublin's pub scene. He revived it with the Victorian pub, but he also brought in, he had the first proper gay bar in Dublin, the George. He
Oh
brought the
my
first
gosh.
pizzas to Dublin, and Pizza Hut or pizza restaurant in he had the Major Tom's break for the border. I think my dad's
Wow.
responsible for a lot of babies being born, a lot of couples hooking up in the break for the border back in the 90s. So he was all tourism, and but a very creative man, but all tourism, hospitality, all of that.
Thanks.
Yeah, so that's the, I was growing up in that in Dublin, and then stepping, like my mom and dad separated quite when we were all quite young. So every holiday, long weekend, anything down to Wexford. So I'm in Goree, so I'm only an hour away from Dublin. It's not even an hour. So 1 foot there, 1 foot here. And big contrast between the two. And that's the thing, growing up, it was always this contrast between the two. And it's only since COVID that the two have just come
Well, I was
together
just about to
beautifully.
say how amazing that they've come together, because now hospitality, tourism, getting, and then everything that you do, and it's amazing. And are you busy? I mean, like, where can people find you? What have you got coming up? Tell us, or anyone is interested in maybe coming on a gallivanting tour.
You can join me pretty much any weekend. I am in here in Wexford, in Goree, with one of the 0.01% ancient native woodlands.
Wow.
I'm lucky enough to have one on my doorstep, Portén Woods. It's this beautiful old woodlands, and in the woods there's an old Celtic cross which was used to convert people to paganism. I used to convert people back now.
Love
So
it.
every Saturday morning I'm there. The Glendalough Goddess Walks will be starting up very soon as
I'm
well. Hopefully they
so
will be on the
excited.
website.
That sounds
Yeah,
amazing.
today. There is one running on Mother's Day on the 10th of March, but these are still test ones, so you'll have to hang back and give me feedback if you're going to be on that one.
Yeah, for sure.
And then I'm regularly hired privately for small groups of friends will hire me. And this is what's starting to happen, actually. Like, I got a lovely phone call there recently. It was a group of about eight women. They live in Marley Park. They walk Marley Park every day as a group. They asked me to come and do a walk of Marley Park with them.
Wow.
So I'm for hire as
Oh my
well.
gosh, I love
So
it. That's
yeah.
incredible. That's amazing. And it's gallivanting.ie
Gallivanting.ie.
website, and on so
Yeah.
are you on Instagram?
I'm on Instagram and I'm
Yeah.
on Facebook. I'm very bad with social media. But I am on Instagram. And just a little word there about the name of my business, Gallivanting.
Yes.
We started off our talk talking about how people, being afraid to go off on their own for walks and stuff. That's gallivanting. I lived in a world of gallivanting. I did my own thing the whole time, and I was always kind of like in my own little bubble, not noticing what was going on. And I was actually, despite my encyclopedic knowledge of myth and legend and magic, I was expelled from school when I was 16, and I
Wow.
was told by my teacher that I was no good for nothing but gallivanting. And so it turns out he was absolutely right. I'm really good at gallivanting, and I basically
the ultimate FU too, isn't it? That is the ultimate last laugh. I absolutely love that. That is brilliant. And so again, because I did ask you when we got sort of sidetracked that I did, where, like, how have you accrued all this knowledge? Is it just from reading, from story, or like, is there?
Reading, talking, listening. We're lucky here in Wexford. We have the storytelling houses of Wexford. They're houses all over the county, and every night of the week there's a different house doing storytelling.
Wow.
I grew up with a family, my mum's side of the family of musicians and storytellers, grew up with it there.
Wow.
And then yeah, I mean, like, I have ADHD, and one of the things you do when you have ADHD is you hyperfocus. And I remember when I was around about, I think I was about 10, finding a book that had been gifted to Dad. It was a Jim Fitzpatrick book, and it's just over there. It's the Silver Arm, it was called. It was all about the Second Battle of Moytura, and the illustrations are just, it's Jim Fitzpatrick. For those of you who don't know who Jim
Yeah.
Fitzpatrick is, he is the man that designed most of Thin Lizzy's albums, and the
Wow.
iconic image of Che Guevara that's on so many t-shirts and cups and
Yes.
whatnot.
Yes.
But he's a very, very talented Irish artist who specializes in gods and goddesses. And
Wow.
10 or 11 years old, being just like, what is this?
Oh
Oh
my
my God, it's the
gosh.
most exciting thing I've ever seen. And that's it then. And now, like, right beside me, there's one, two, three, four, five books here beside me. And I, like, these are all absolute research. There's loads of them.
Wow,
So,
mythical Ireland. Oh my God.
yeah, if I can actually recommend, if you are interested,
Yeah.
Anthony Murphy, Mythical
Oh,
Ireland.
okay.
Anybody in my line of work will know who Anthony Murphy is. He is the guy who bridges between the myth and fact, and
Right.
very interesting man. But yeah, so reading, research, talking.
But can I just ask though, I mean, obviously Jim Fitzpatrick, Anthony Murphy, two men again, when they're writing, I mean, are there men, do we do
They're getting it there. They're
are the
getting it.
are the women's stories coming through in those books is what I want to
I'm
know
looking
about.
for a ghostwriter, if any woman out there is interested. I am
Wow.
looking for a ghostwriter, and there are a
Amazing.
few. This is by Ethna Massey, and this is a beautiful book, actually.
Legendary
This is
Ireland.
Legendary Ireland's Most Enchanted Places, and she just kind of picks a couple of places in the different provinces. So she has a province, Leinster, Munster, and she's different
Yes.
stories on each area. But yeah, no, we do need more women writers. But if you did want to learn more about pagan Ireland, there is a female writer. She is American, but don't hold that against her, because I know she's writing about Irish folklore and Irish myth and legend. But her name is Morgan Daimler, and
Okay.
absolutely amazing woman, really amazing
Right.
books.
Okay.
So, and then there's Laura O'Brien, who runs the Irish Pagan School, and
Right.
so she, so there are women out there, but we're, it's, look at one of the things I was talking about there recently was the Bullion Stones,
Oh, yeah.
and how, when you go out on a tour with a lot of, I have seen, I've heard many guides over the years say, we don't know what a Bullion stone is for. So for your listeners, a Bullion stone are usually a cup-sized hole in a rock, and they're often found at old church sites and pagan sites. And the archaeology, or the guys will say, we don't know. There's lots of debate about them. And to be honest, I actually think they're mortars and pestles, communal mortars and pestles,
Right, wow.
used for grinding acorns. And if you go to America, you will find them at Native American sites, where, and the women will still use them. They will still grind the acorns. And I often kind of go back to that story about the oldest calendar. I don't know if you've ever heard this story, Ariana. The oldest calendar ever found, Mesopotamia, 28 days it marked. And for decades, there was all these debates over what the calendar was for. It was 28 days. So is it planting? Is it a journey? Is it a is it something that, it was for years. And
Menstrual cycle,
it
maybe.
wasn't until recently, when women started entering that arena, that a female archaeologist said, actually, I think I know what it is. And like, so there's more of us coming into the arena now. And so I'm very hopeful. I do get a lot of younger women on my walks, and I love that, the young maidens as well as the mothers and the crones, because Like, I am a mother. I have three girls, and I remember coming back from a protest walk about women's rights when they were still in school. Now they're all in their 20s and are gone now, but when they were still in school, and they were about 14 and 15, and they were so angry in the back seat talking about women's rights and women's body rights particularly, and they were saying things that I only learned in my late 20s, early 30s. They were saying it before they'd even properly gone on to the dating scene, which is brilliant. So, things are changing.
Things are
So
changing,
things
exactly.
are
But
changing.
I think what we need to change though is that we need to go back, which is very, which is really strange. I mean, I think we talk about being forward and progress and all of that kind of thing, but actually, I think what we really need to do is
Oh, yeah.
go back
We
to
do need to
the
go back.
old ways and go back to the land and to go back
Yeah.
to the simpler way of being. And I think, all of the, you can see people, even with phones, people have stopped using smartphones. They're going back to using like the Nokia phones because they're of the distraction, or vinyl. I mean, I have a vinyl player over there. People are going back to vinyl. People are, and that's just going back in, a couple of decades. But actually, I'm really into watching Called Midwife at the moment. I started watching it, talking about kind of,
Love that show.
yeah, love that show. But it's really interesting because I'm seeing, how they're making progress in the sort of the 60s, and they're taking the women from the house, from giving birth in the houses and bringing them into the hospitals, et cetera, et cetera. But actually, I know now a lot of women are opting to have their
Going
babies at
back.
home again, and they're going and they're
Yeah.
employing doulas, and they're kind of like doing that
Well, this
and
is
sort of
it.
taking
And
it out.
even like those four quarter festivals, they were actually kind of like a guideline to life in some ways as well, in that in the springtime, excuse me, at Imbolc, St. Bridget's Day, this is planting season, so you're going to get out there now, and I say I do this myself, so for me, with the way I work my yearly calendar, it's February, right? Okay, like get the website sorted, get the tour set, get Airbnb worked out, get in all of that. Come May, then, when we hit Bjelltane, after the Bjelltane festival, you will find me dancing on the hill of Uisneach with all the other pagans. After that, though, it's work, 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 and I will work nonstop for 6 months till Samhain. When Samhain hits, though, traditionally in Ireland, all farming jobs and everything like that would have always been finished and done and dusted. The yard is filled, the house is filled, the fire pit is filled. Everything's in, done and dusted. So coming into to Samhain, I'll be the same. I'll get my fire logs in, I'll get my pantry stocked, I'll get all, and then the 1st of October, then for the next 3 months until Imbolc comes around again, next 3 months, that's a period of rest. You know we've got these shortened hours of daylight. The trees are asleep, the plants are asleep, the animals are asleep, we should be as well. So never
And they
feel
are in
guilty.
Europe, let me tell
They
you.
are,
Like
yes.
I spent a year traveling around Europe, and I mean, most people over there, they work like 2 months of the year or something. Like they work their busy summer period, and then they don't work at all. Like they really shut down.
And
It's
that's the
like,
way it was supposed to be. And
yeah.
funnily enough, there are accounts of when the British landlord, the landlord era of Ireland, the 1700s and the 1800s, despairing about the lack of work ethic from the Irish, because they would only work in the summer, and in the winter they don't seem to want to work. And but actually, that's the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly. Well, here. Let's definitely bring that back for sure.
Yeah. Wrapping yourself
So.
in duvet in the winter, eating chocolate biscuits by the fire. Medically,
Oh,
it's the best thing you could possibly
love
do.
it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Oh my God. Listen, we could literally talk. We were wrapping up about 10 minutes ago. We're still, and I could
I
talk for ages. I'll just quickly say as well, the book that I read is Breathan Law, The Ancient Wisdom of Ireland by Joe Kerrigan. It is very, just sort of a simple book to read that kind of just tells you about the honor prizes and things like that. Just a starter book, I suppose, for anyone who might be interested
Can I add to that and just say that any of Joe Kerrigan's books are fantastic?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, good. My heart for a second, I thought you were going to be like, that's a terrible book. Oh no. Oh my God, Lorraine, we'll have to get you back on again. Maybe when you're have your goddess tour up and running, you might come back and kind of share some stories from that as well. I think even
Absolutely.
more stories than you already have. It's been absolutely wonderful. I'm so excited to put this episode out. But thank you so much. And I will definitely see you on that goddess tour as soon as I look at the one for
Absolutely.
March 10th as well. But thank you so much. Really appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Arianna.